An exhortation to resolve upon Bodhi. With commentary by Venerable Master Xuan Hua. A brief biography of Great Master Xing'an. The Master's name was Shi Xian, real sage. His formal name was Si Qi, wanting to equal, and his style name was Xing'an, reflection and sanctuary. He was the son of the Shi family from the Zhangshou district. His parents raised him in the Confucian tradition. He left home at an early age and practiced the Vinaya, moral precepts, very strictly. He always enjoyed listening to the Dharma. His knowledge of the teachings was profound and included both the school of the nature and the school of Marx. He investigated the topic, who is mindful of the Buddha. When he meditated, he concentrated without cease for over 4 months and suddenly achieved enlightenment. He said, "I have awakened from a dream." Ever after, his skillful instructions in the style of the Chan school were both quick and sharp. His eloquence was compelling and invincible. The master studied the Tripitaka by day and recited the Buddha's name by night. He burned his finger as a sacrifice before the Buddha at Akshoka Mountain Monastery and made 48 great vows. His sincerity elicited a response from the Buddha's Sharira, and they put forth splendorous light. An essay he wrote called An Exhortation to Resolve Upon Bodhi encouraged the fourfold assembly in their cultivation. Many of the people who read this essay were moved to tears. On the 14th day of the fourth lunar month, during the 12th year of the Yongzheng reign period, A.D. 1734 of the Qing dynasty, he faced west and quietly passed away. Myriads of people attended the funeral of Great Master Xing'an. Suddenly he opened his eyes and said, "I am going now and will come back soon. Birth and death are the important matter. Everyone should purify his mind and recite the Buddha's name to end birth and death." He put his palms together and recited the Buddha's name continuously, then passed away once again. A verse of praise goes, "His compassionate mind was so vast that he wrote an essay called An Exhortation to Resolve Upon Bodhi. His vow power was so profound that he made 48 vows in all. His practice and understanding of Buddhism were so real and true that his auspicious responses were beyond compare. Therefore, the lineage of the Pure Land School survives due to his strenuous efforts." Essay. I, the unworthy Shi Xian, a lowly, ordinary Sangin, weeping blood and bowing to the ground, exhort the great assembly and present-day men and women of pure faith, please listen and consider what I am about to say. We have heard that resolving the mind is foremost among the essential doors for entering the path, and that making vows is first among the crucial matters in cultivation. By making vows, we can save living beings. By resolving our minds, we can realize the Buddha's path. If we do not make our resolve great and our vows firm, we will remain on the turning wheel throughout as many kalpas as there are particles of dust. Any cultivation will be only bitter toil done in vain. As the Flower Adornment Sutra says, "If you forget your resolve upon Bodhi, your cultivation of even wholesome practices becomes the karma of demons." From this it is clear that forgetting our resolve upon Bodhi is even worse than having never made the resolve. Thus we know that anyone wishing to study the vehicle of the Thus Come Ones must first make the vows of a bodhisattva without delay. Commentary. An exhortation to resolve upon Bodhi. This essay is a series of logical reasons for encouraging us to make a resolve. What resolve should we make? We should resolve upon Bodhi. What is the resolve upon Bodhi? It is a resolve to understand. It is the resolve to turn back from confusion and return to enlightenment, to give up what is deviant and return to what is proper, to clearly know right from wrong, to stop being upside down, and to be straightforward. There is absolutely nothing devious or crooked about a straightforward mind. The resolve for Bodhi is a resolve to benefit people. By benefiting others, you benefit yourself. By working to lead others to become enlightened, you yourself become enlightened. Bodhi is a Sanskrit term. It means to enlighten to the path. You understand the path and thus are able to cultivate. You can't cultivate if you don't understand the path. You will be upside down forever. You'll think what is right is wrong, and what is wrong is right. You'll think black is white and get everything backwards. You'll walk the proper road if you understand the path. If not, you will walk a deviant path. The important point of resolving on Bodhi is that you do no evil, but respectfully practice all good. These are simply the moral precepts. You maintain your resolve for Bodhi if you follow the rules. You have forgotten your resolve when you don't follow the rules. By Shramana Shirshien of the Brahma Heaven Monastery in ancient Hangzhou. From of old, the area has been called Hangzhou. Hangzhou has been a place where the Buddha Dharma has flourished. In the past, the seven Buddhas of antiquity had come into this world in different places in Hangzhou, such as Tiantai Mountain, Northern View Mountain, Western View Mountain, Southern View Mountain, and East View Mountain. The people of China have deep roots in the Great Vehicle because the Buddhas of the past have chosen to come into this world in China. Thus, the seeds were planted very early on. Brahma Heaven Monastery. Brahma means pure. The Brahma Heaven is a heaven of purity. Shramana is an ordinary title of a left-home person. It is Sanskrit and means to diligently wipe out. You diligently cultivate precepts, samadhi, and wisdom, meaning that you aren't upside down. And it also means to wipe out greed, hatred, and stupidity, meaning that you aren't muddled or ignorant. It is a title for all fully ordained monastics. The person specifically referred to here is Shirshien. His other name is Sichi. His other title is Xing'an, the title most people use. Therefore, the title page lists the name of the great master as author. It is called an essay because of the style in which it was written. It has an introduction, body, and conclusion. The many doctrines are succinctly stated paragraph by paragraph, and the master used the appropriate outline, grammar, and particles for the style. It is terse, yet the ideas are stated in full. Thus, this essay is very important. The master begins, "I, the unworthy Shirshien, a lowly, ordinary Sangan." He was genuinely sincere at this point. His sincerity showed because he was weeping blood. He wept until his eyes bled. Think it over. If not for his sincerity, how else could he have cried until he wept tears of blood? Although it is just a figure of speech, it is used to show his sincerity. And bowing to the ground. In a full prostration, he was about to exhort the great assembly, which includes all monastics and lay people, and all other living beings. Great assembly refers to many kinds of living beings, not simply humans alone, and present-day men and women of pure faith. The present day then, and the present day now, referring to the pure and faithful men and women then and now, including both monastics and lay disciples. Please, kindly, listen and consider what I am about to say. Now I hope you all will be kind and spare a few moments to listen to and think over what I have to say. We have heard people say that resolving the mind is foremost among the essential doors for entering the path. We definitely must resolve on Bodhi. It is the most important step. And that making vows is first among the crucial matters in cultivation. What is the most crucial part of cultivating that we must understand? Making vows. We absolutely must make vows or else we'll be unable to cultivate. Our attempts will be making pretenses at cultivating the way. Not daring to make vows, what path will we be cultivating? We'll be cheating people. If we really want to cultivate the path, why wouldn't we dare to make vows? Making vows is first among the crucial matters in cultivation. By making vows, we can save living beings. Our vows support us. Without vows, people may even say that they cultivate but will forget at crucial moments and not remember what they have said. The power of our vows will be like a boat with which we can ferry people across. How can we ferry anyone across without a boat? By resolving our minds, we can realize the Buddha's path. By resolving on Bodhi, we will have what it takes to become a Buddha. People don't create the opportunity to become Buddhas unless they resolve on Bodhi. This is the crux, the important message. If we do not make our resolve great, if we fail to make a great resolve, we may instead become petty and narrow-minded, unable to take even the slightest loss or renounce anything. We should make our vows firm and unchanging. I will do what I said without fail. Otherwise, we will remain on the turning wheel throughout as many kalpas as there are particles of dust. Such people will never be able to cease traversing through the turning wheel of the six paths, the three good paths of the gods, the humans, the asuras, and the three evil paths of the hells, the hungry ghosts, and the animals. We'll keep touring the circuit. By doing good deeds, we may be reborn as a god in the heavens or as a person in the world and live a life of luxury. But what is the point of such a life? We remain on the turning wheel. Any cultivation, being vegetarian, reciting sutras, reciting the Buddha's name, will be only bitter toil done in vain. Without the resolve for Bodhi, no matter how much we do, it will only be a lot of hard work without any ultimate result. Any practices we do will not be ultimate. As the Flower Adornment Sutra says, if you forget your resolve upon Bodhi, your cultivation of even wholesome practices becomes the karma of demons. We will end up doing the deeds of heavenly demons because we have failed to sever ignorance. We may cultivate, but if we have forgotten our resolve on Bodhi, our mindfulness will be impure. When our mindfulness is pure, we are supported by the resolve for Bodhi. When our mindfulness is impure, we will create the karma of demons. From this it is clear that forgetting our resolve upon Bodhi may cause us to create demonic karma even when cultivating wholesome practices. That is even worse than having never made the resolve. What will we be cultivating if we don't resolve on Bodhi? It is to be feared that anything we cultivate will be demonic karma. Thus we know that anyone wishing to study the vehicle of the Thus Come Ones, the Buddha Dharma, must first make the vows of a Bodhisattva. We must have the resolve of a Bodhisattva. Without vow power of a Bodhisattva, we will get stuck in the demon's lair. Without delay. Don't wait to resolve on Bodhi. You may not say, "Wait a while. Then I'll resolve on Bodhi and make the vows of a Bodhisattva." You certainly must make the resolve for Bodhi and vow to cultivate the Bodhisattva path. Then you can transcend the turning wheel and end birth and death. Essay. But resolves and vows are various, and they have many aspects. If they are not pointed out, how can we know what direction to take? I will now explain them in general for the great assembly. There are 8 aspects of a resolve: deviant, proper, true, false, great, small, partial, and complete. What is meant by deviant, proper, true, false, great, small, partial, and complete? A cultivator's resolve is deviant if, in his practice, he does not investigate his own mind but knows only about external matters. Perhaps he seeks benefit and offerings, likes fame and a good reputation, is greedy for objects of pleasure in the present, or he may hope for reward in the future. A resolve such as this is deviant. When a cultivator seeks neither gain nor fame and has no greed either for pleasure or for rewards, but wishes only to settle the matter of birth and death and to attain Bodhi, then his resolve is proper. Commentary. But, since the situation is like this, we certainly must resolve upon Bodhi and make firm vows, or else we will never become Buddhas and never reach our goals. Resolves and vows are various. People's wishes are of many different kinds, and they have many aspects. A resolve comes from a person's thinking, from his goals, his will, and his intent. There are many different aspects involved. 84,000, you could say, if they are not pointed out. If I don't explain them in general to show them to you, how can we know what direction to take? How shall we know that we should stride forward in progress? How could we know the goal? I will now explain them in general for the great assembly. Great Master Shing'an says, "Now, for the entire assembly, I will describe them in general. There are 8 aspects of a resolve. In general, these 8 describe the kind of resolve: deviant, proper, true, false, great, small, partial, and complete. In explaining these eight, we can use the six guiding principles of the city of 10,000 Buddhas to describe the kind of resolve we should have. To be deviant is to always be selfish. To be proper is to benefit others and gain no personal benefit. To be false is to do things for personal gain, not for the benefit of others. To have a small resolve means that you do things for personal gain. Such smallness would lead to fighting, seeking, and being greedy for personal profit. It involves having only oneself in view. If we can do things for everyone's good, be proper and unbiased, make universal offerings, take the Dharma realm as our substance, and take empty space as our function, then that is great. To have a great resolve means that we wish to benefit others. Partial refers to being biased and cleaving to a minority, a small part of the whole. Complete refers to comprising everything and excluding nothing. A verse well describes the aspects of being complete. With the Dharma realm as our substance, what is there outside? With all of empty space as our function, everything is contained. The myriad things are all level and equal. Let discriminations go to where words have never traveled, and before a single thought comes forth. What could be outside of the Dharma realm? Empty space is the great function of people. It contains everything. See that everything that happens is all the same. This is to be complete. These aspects are described in detail in the text that follows. What is meant by deviant, proper, true, false, great, small, partial, and complete? What is a deviant resolve? A cultivator's resolve is deviant if, in his practice, he does not investigate his own mind but knows only about external matters. A cultivator refers to a monastic. In this case, he practices but merely puts on a good show. He might perform repentance ceremonies, bow to the Buddhas, and also recite sutras. He is putting on a show for people around him. He doesn't return the light and look within. Am I repenting in my heart? Am I bowing in my heart to the Buddhas? Am I reciting sutras in my heart? If he is reciting inside, then he is being true. But his resolve is deviant if he is simply putting on a show, pretending to be an old hand at cultivating, and advertises whatever work he does. He, for example, waits until others are coming his way. Then he starts sweeping the walkways, putting on a show. Since he is putting on a show, not only does he fail to generate merit and virtue, he becomes deviant and improper. He advertises his shows and tells others how he helps them, hoping they will appreciate him. We should be clear about this deviant aspect and understand this saying. We help others and seek nothing in return. We teach others, but not so that they will owe us a favor. We help others whenever we can, but shouldn't keep in mind a list of what we've done for others and broadcast the news. Did you know? I renovated that temple. He points out the dedication plaques bearing his name, fearing that others might not see what he has done. Thus he seeks benefit and offerings. Someone with a proper resolve would never behave like that. Deviant and proper is a match pair of opposites. Deviance is yin. Properness is yang. Deviant people can't face up to the light of day. Proper people shine forth a bright light, They are full of light, and their behavior is correct in any given circumstance. In his practice, he does not investigate his own mind. He doesn't work on his own nature. Instead, he looks outside himself and knows about only external matters. He might perform repentance ceremonies for others or recite sutras for others, putting on a big show and becoming exhausted every day. And he tells everyone of his labors, pretending to be a great philanthropist, blabbing to everyone, letting the story out. He doesn't humbly mask his talents while correcting his own faults. Why does he advertise? He is looking for benefits. He wants others to make offerings to him and believe in him. He wants people to give him special gifts. Give a cultivator special gifts, and you might cause him to stop cultivating. Therefore, no one should give special gifts to others and make special offerings to one single person. Or he likes fame and a good reputation, enjoys having others spread the word that he is an old hand at cultivating the way, a grand cultivator, and truly fine. Or like others who pretend to be monastics but actually eat meat, drink alcohol, and play around. He is greedy for objects of pleasure in the present. Such people hanker for temporal pleasures. They might even have palatial temples and live like kings. Don't be fooled by any show they may put on. What does it matter that their temples are as fancy as imperial palaces? Even a king can fall to lower realms. They might hope for reward in the future. They think, by doing these good deeds now, in future lives, I'll be a king and have everything the way I want. A resolve such as this is deviant. What is it like when a cultivator seeks neither gain nor fame? What does it mean to be proper? One has no greed either for pleasure or for rewards, or enjoying luxuries or taking vacation trips to amusement parks. One wishes only to settle the matters of birth and death, to end birth and death, and to attain Bodhi, seeking true and proper wisdom. Then his resolve is proper. The resolve is deviant if a person doesn't wish to settle the matter of birth and death. Cultivators must be clear about this point, or else they can cultivate for a long time, but what they will do will still be the karma of demons. They might cultivate a long time, but they still will be part of the demon king's retinue. Essay: if in moment after moment he seeks the path of the Buddhas above, in thought after thought, he transforms living beings below. If he hears that the road to Buddhahood is long and far, yet does not retreat in fear. If he observes that beings are hard to transform, yet does not become weary. If he proceeds as though climbing a 10,000-foot mountain, determined to reach the summit, or proceeds as though ascending a 9-storied stupa, fixed upon advancing to the top, then his resolve is true. If he commits offenses but does not repent of them, if he has faults but does not change them, if he is turbid inside but makes a show of purity, if he is diligent at the start but lacks later on, if he has good intentions but mixes them with a quest for name and gain, if he does wholesome practices but defiles them with the karma created by committing offenses, then his resolve is false. When the realm of living beings has come to an end, then my vows will end. When the Bodhi Way is realized, then my vows will be fulfilled. Such a resolve is great. If he views the triple realm as a prison, if he treats birth and death as an enemy, if he intends to save only himself and has no wish to save others, then his resolve is small. Commentary. If, in moment after moment, he seeks the path of the Buddhas above. This aspect of a resolve describes someone who has his mind on what he is doing and thinks of nothing else. What does he think of? He seeks the path of the Buddhas above, the path that leads to Buddhahood. In thought after thought, he transforms living beings below. We must do good deeds if we want to become Buddhas. We can't expect to become Buddhas without expending even the slightest bit of effort. We must perform acts of merit and service. How? By teaching and transforming living beings, enabling them to give up any deviant or false ways they have and return to what is proper and true. If we can thus cause living beings to wake up, then we will be doing good deeds in Buddhism. He hears that the road to Buddhahood is long and far, yet does not retreat in fear. Becoming a Buddha is not easy. The road to Buddhahood is long and far. It took Shakyamuni Buddha 3 major Asamkhya Kalpas to become a Buddha. Even 1 Asamkhya Kalpa is a measureless number. Asamkhya is a Sanskrit word for measureless number, and it took 3 major measureless numbers. So, someone may hear of this long time involved and heave an exasperated sigh of despair, or even become frightened thinking, "How shall I ever cultivate for such a long time?" Like when we read the Buddhist sutras and think, "This sutra is so long. When shall I ever finish reading it? How will I ever learn to memorize the whole thing?" These are all examples of thoughts of retreat. Here, however, you don't think of retreating even though Buddhahood is a long way off. Instead, you are vigorous, never forgetting the basic duty of a cultivator of the way. He observes that beings are hard to transform, yet does not become weary. Teaching living beings is difficult indeed. Try to get them to stop their bad habits, and instead of stopping, they will pursue their habits even more. Living beings are strange in this way. Try and help them, and they won't accept your help. They are hard to save, so we might become weary or fed up unless our resolve is proper. If he proceeds as though climbing a 10,000-foot mountain, or a 30,000-foot mountain, or even a 30,000-mile-high mountain, the point being, a lofty mountain, determined to reach the summit of that mountain, or proceeds as though ascending a 9-story stupa, a jewel pagoda, fixed upon advancing to the top, then his resolve is true. A resolve like that, where we don't give up halfway or quit before we get there, but see it through to the end, indicates a proper resolve upon Bodhi. However, if he commits offenses but does not repent of them, then although he makes mistakes, he conceals them, is not frank, and does not confess to everyone and reform. If he has faults but does not change them, although he plainly has a problem, he claims that his vices are ingrained habit patterns from time immemorial and is unable to change his ways. He is simply unwilling to get rid of his faults. If he is turbid inside but makes a show of purity, in his heart he is jealous, obstructive, stupid, full of false thinking, arrogant, and full of doubt, but puts on a show to others of being pure and lofty. If he is diligent at the start, but lax later on. The vigor he showed when he first left home to cultivate slackens. He never sees it through. His strength gives out. If he might have good intentions but mixes them with a quest for name and gain, then his motives in doing good deeds is to get a good reputation. So he tries to pull the wool over people's eyes and make a good name for himself. Everything he does is for name and gain. Nothing he does is truly for the sake of the Buddha Dharma. If he does wholesome practices, even though those methods are good, he defiles them with the karma created by committing offenses, doing very sordid, messy things, like some of the things that happen when those who claim to be Buddhists of the secret school cheat people, carry on, and get involved in scandalous deeds. This is the secret school, they claim. That's the way we do things in the secret school. They are just wounding other people. And ignorant followers blindly obey, believing that the secret school is the most esoteric sect of Buddhism, and they get banned and dragged into the mess. If he has resolved upon Bodhi for these reasons, then his resolve is false. He is phony. When the realm of living beings has come to an end, what is the great resolve? It is the wish to save all living beings. Earth Store Bodhisattva exhibits such resolve, for example, in his vow that only when the hells are empty will I become a Buddha. Only when all living beings are saved will I accomplish Bodhi. And when all afflictions are gone, then my vows will end. When all living beings have been saved, then my vow power will be finished. When the Bodhi way is realized, when my cultivation of the road to enlightenment and to becoming a Buddha is completed, then my vows will be fulfilled. They will have been successful. Such a resolve is great. Nothing is greater than this. This is the resolve of a bodhisattva. If he views the triple realm, the desire realm, the form realm, and the formless realm, as a prison, if he treats birth and death as an enemy, then he has a viewpoint of the Theravada. The arhats see the world this way. They see the cycle of being born and dying over and over again as an enemy. If he intends to save only himself and has no wish to save others, then his resolve is small. Small means that one is narrow-minded. Great means that one is broad-minded. Essay. If he sees living beings as existing outside of his mind, if he does wish to save others and to realize Buddhahood, but does not forget his own accumulation of merit, and does not get rid of his worldly knowledge and views, then his resolve is partial. If he knows that his own nature is the same as living beings, and therefore vows to save them, if he knows that his own nature is the same as the Buddha path, and therefore vows to realize it, if he does not see even one thing as existing apart from the mind, if his mind is like empty space, if he makes vows that are like empty space, If he cultivates practices that are like empty space, if he attains a fruition like empty space, and yet does not grasp at the characteristic of empty space, then his resolve is complete. Having understood these eight different aspects of a resolve, we should know how to investigate and contemplate them. Knowing how to investigate and contemplate them, we know which to keep and which to discard. Knowing which to keep and which to discard, we can then resolve our minds. What does it mean to investigate and contemplate them? We must ask ourselves, which of these eight aspects does my resolve have? Is my resolve deviant or proper, true or false, great or small, partial or complete? What does it mean to keep or discard? It means that we discard the deviant, the false, the small, and the partial, and that we keep the proper, the true, the great, and the complete. To make a resolve in this way is truly and properly to resolve upon Bodhi. Commentary. If he sees living beings as existing outside of his mind, if he does wish to save others and to become a Buddha, he does want to save the other living beings he perceives to be outside of his mind, and does want to perfect the path of becoming a Buddha which he perceives to be outside of his mind, but does not forget his own accumulation of merit. If he is always thinking of the merits of saving living beings and becoming a Buddha, he becomes very attached to the idea and does not get rid of his worldly knowledge and views. Not being able to wipe out his own deviant knowledge and deviant views, his resolve is partial. If he is always attached to these things inside, his resolve is false. He doesn't understand the complete doctrine. He still has biased and partial views. If he knows that his own nature is the same as living beings, he knows that living beings are not apart from his own nature. Living beings are inside of his own nature. He therefore vows to save them. He vows to save the living beings of his own nature, vows to sever the afflictions of his own nature, vows to study the Dharma doors of his own nature, and vows to accomplish the path of his own nature that leads to becoming a Buddha. If he knows that his own nature is the same as the Buddha path, and he wants to accomplish the Buddha path of his own nature, then he vows to realize it. He wants to become a Buddha because Buddhahood is not apart from his own nature. If he does not see even one thing as existing apart from the mind, then there is nothing to become attached to, and no one should have any attachment to anything. If one thinks that there are things outside of one's own nature that can be studied, and one seeks the Dharma outside of one's own nature, then such people have entered an externalist path. How should one be? If his mind is like empty space, if he makes vows that are vast like empty space, if he cultivates practices that are like empty space, and everything he does is like empty space, if he attains a fruition as big as empty space, and yet does not grasp at the characteristic of empty space, then he is not attached to thinking that empty space has any certain characteristic. An attachment would take place were he to ascribe any certain characteristic to empty space. If he makes a resolve in this way, then his resolve is complete. Having understood these 8 different aspects of a resolve and their characteristics, we know how to investigate and contemplate them in detail. Knowing how to investigate and contemplate them, we know which to keep, which aspects we want, and which to discard, and which aspects we don't want. Knowing which to keep and which to discard, we can then resolve our minds. What does it mean to investigate and contemplate them? How do we find out? We must ask ourselves, which of these 8 aspects does my resolve have? Is my resolve deviant or proper, true or false, great or small, partial or complete? We should ask ourselves, what does it mean to keep or discard? After asking ourselves and recognizing our own resolve, it means that we discard and get rid of the deviant, the false, the small, and the partial, and that we keep the proper, the true, the great, and the complete. To make a resolve in this way is truly and properly to resolve upon Bodhi. If we understand how to resolve upon Bodhi as described above, in the future, we can perfect a Bodhi like empty space.